Hello, this is Mark Peacock, and welcome to the Travel Commons Podcast. This is Travel Commons Podcast number 128, recorded Friday, March 31st, 2017. This is the podcast giving the voice of the traveler. It's more about the journey than the destination. Two topics on this edition of the Travel Commons Podcast: the hunt for experiences and pop-up entertainment. So coming to you from the Travel Commons studios outside of Chicago, Illinois, after a full month of travel. I'm not complaining, though, because, well, first of all, I had been home off the road for 4 weeks straight. And to be honest, I was beginning to make the place look a bit untidy. And then, secondly, more than a week of this travel spurt was in Paris on vacation with the family. Tough to complain about travel with your mouth full of great food and wine, and mine certainly was. I'm not even looking at a scale for another 2 weeks. In what's become our usual pattern for European trips, we flew out on Thursday night. Now, this works out well because typically Friday is a catch-up day at work anyhow, more about sort of internal conference calls than any real sort of client work. So it's easier to skip out, and then landing on a Friday, you know, more places are open. Like for us, the rental agency offices, a phone store, you know, if you need them. So that works out pretty well. My wife and I actually, well, we flew into Paris, got in around, I'd say like around 9:30. It was a direct United flight from O'Hare to Charles de Gaulle, and then had a 3-star Michelin lunch at about 2 o'clock in the afternoon just to chase away the jet lag, while the kids met up in Edinburgh for the weekend and lived off of beer and haggis. I think we got the better part of that deal. They then hopped one of the budget carriers to Charles de Gaulle Sunday night and managed to figure out the train well enough to land at the doorstep of our vacation rental on Rue de Rivoli, a bridge and a couple of blocks straight up from Notre Dame. My wife has really, she's got this whole vacation rental thing down to, I think, a near science. I think I need to nag her into writing it up on a post on the Travel Commons website. Now, in the travel buildup to the Paris trip, another usual pattern, this one, though not so great, involves a bit more stupid travel, bouncing across multiple cities and clients to give everyone the FaceTime they need before I disappear for a week. So through this, I found myself in Miami for a couple of days. I then flew American back home to Chicago Friday night, and I guess because I was going between two of their hubs, I ended up on one of American's international 767s. Now, I got to tell you, I typically despise 767s because the overhead bins are just so way undersized. But this was a domestic flight, and it was one of the best domestic upgrades I've scored. First, because first and business class, there's just a whole lot more seats to upgrade. And then this 767's business class had been refurbed, so I had my own pod with a lie flat seat and a 20-something inch screen, a hell of a lot bigger than the screen that was smaller than my hand on the United 767 I took from O'Hare to Charles de Gaulle. I tweeted that picture out. All in all, the upgrade on American, one of the best upgrades I've gotten domestically. It absolutely made for a very comfortable 3-hour flight back home. But back to Paris, the trip really went without a hitch. I mean, the strong dollar made an expensive city a little less so. The weather was great for March, sunny, a bit brisk, and I was pleasantly surprised how easy it was to get around with just English. Now, I know I am an absolute language sloth, troglodyte, pick your noun there. And while I didn't expect to be able to get by with English as well as I could, I was happy not to have to struggle through what is very minimal French. Basically, yes, no, numbers, please, thank you. That is about it. Indeed, the only sort of smirch on the trip was at the very end. We landed at O'Hare after 7 p.m., after half of immigration was shut down. The resulting lines were insane. Security was walking plane loads of people from the other side of the international terminal to our side and then all the way to the back of the line. They were shouting for all U.S. citizens to stand to the left of the hallway. After about 10 minutes of this, I asked a security person about global entry. Oh, go this way, she said, and pointed down an empty line on the right. We just bolted and were out after another 5 minutes. I tell you, customs should have had a guy walk in the line taking global entry applications. They would have made a killing. Following up, first, a belated thank you to iTunes user California Flying for the 5-star review they put back in January on iTunes. The review: as a project manager with lots of travel thrown in, I really enjoy hearing Mark's travel tales and can very much relate to his insight and observations. It's an easy and fun listen. Just wish it was more frequent. Well, hey, thanks for taking the time to write that review. I really appreciate it. I'm glad you enjoy the podcast. And actually, I am trying on the frequency. So this will now be 3 straight months of episodes. So I think we're starting 2017 in the right way. In the last episode, after deconstructing my own top 10 travel tips list, I asked for listener contributions, and Dan wrote this on the Travel Commons website. He said, "My biggest travel tip now to my friends is to get Nexus. Not only is it great when coming or going to the U.S., he says we live in Canada, but it gets you TSA pre-check while in the U.S., which is great to have." Dan, that's a great tip. I'll tell you, as a U.S. citizen, I'm still a bit confused on the global entry versus Nexus choice, but anything that lets you skip immigration lines and keeps you from having to disrobe in the security line is a very good thing. Dan Brenner and Max Flight both hit the Travel Commons Facebook page to say they found the VPN comparisons in the last episode very useful. Dan said he also uses PIA, a private internet access, a VPN that I use, and we tested on the last episode. And he said he found that actually sometimes Netflix will let it connect, which I mentioned in the last episode is kind of the acid test for location shifting. Dan said, though, it's a bit hit and miss, though. And when makes sense, when we tested it, it was definitely a miss. But Dan, glad to hear you've gotten at least a little bit of connectivity there. Now, continuing the thread from the past couple of episodes on buying pay-as-you-go SIMs when overseas, well, there you go. My Paris experiences were a mixed bag. Now, on that first Friday, between picking up the apartment keys and heading over to the George Sank for lunch, I wanted to pick up at least one SIM so we'd have some connectivity. I walked to the nearest Orange store, which is about 3 blocks down Rue de Rivoli from our flat, but they didn't have any regular prepaid SIMs in stock, only the special holiday or traveler SIMs, which had inter-EU calling, which I didn't need, and at €40 was more than I needed to pay. And this thing became now a common refrain. Every company-owned Orange store or SFR, which is another telco, another mobile provider, every one of the company stores I visited was out of prepaid SIMs. Now, only what looked to be sort of a franchised Orange store in the bottom of the big underground shopping mall at La Halle, they were the only guys who had them. And it was also very friendly service. They were great folks. And so that ended up getting us through the weekend. And then on Monday, after another string of Orange stiff arms, we walked up to the main Free store. Now, Free is the latest mobile provider, and I think they sell TV or cable as well. So we ended up I'm not sure if it's the main store, the main office, whatever, but in the lobby, they had a whole bunch of kiosks. We walked up to one and pretty quickly had 2 more SIMs. It was just a much better buying experience, except for the fact, again, that this sort of store or office was very inconveniently sort of tucked away down some bland business street north of the Champs-Élysées. As I mentioned in past episodes, I'm going to be very glad when these eSIMs get market traction. And continuing another thread, this one on Uber. Now, while I regularly use Uber and Lyft in the U.S., I rarely, if ever, use them when traveling in Europe. I got to thinking about this while in Paris, when on the Saturday when we were heading to the airport, we chose to roll the luggage to a taxi rank rather than use Uber. I think it's a couple of reasons. First, there doesn't actually seem to be that much of a price difference between Uber and taxis. Now, I first noticed this in Lisbon last year, last May when we were there, and then again in Paris just this month. Second, most taxis in Europe are not the beaters that many U.S. cabs are. In the U.S., even at the same rate, I'll often take Uber just because the cars are in so much better shape. I mean, the cabs in Baltimore last summer were the most egregious case. There was a cab stand right outside the building that I was working in, but honestly, I'd wait 5 minutes for an Uber because those cabs were just so awful. And I guess then the third reason, and maybe this is sort of the most nebulous, or, I don't know, squishy reason, I'm maybe, I don't know, a little less comfortable getting into a rideshare in a country where I don't know the language, and I'm not confident that I'm solid on all the customs and procedures. In the U.S., I know what's right and what's not. Even in the U.K., I'm comfortable enough and don't worry about inability to communicate effectively with the driver. Now, I know zero Portuguese and just a tiny little bit more French, so I'm a bit more willing to search out a taxi stand. So I was flipping through the online version of the UK's Telegraph newspaper earlier this month, a couple weeks ago, and got clickbaited into a top 10 airport listicle from the 2017 Skytrax World Airport Awards. I've never heard of these guys before. But I thought I'd look through it. They had all the usual suspects at the top of the list. Singapore, Seoul, Hong Kong. But at number four, they had Munich. I was stunned because my last two experiences connecting through Munich, last November when I was en route to Pisa, and then this month, a couple of weeks ago, on my way back from Paris, just were not great experiences, as my Twitter followers already know. Probably the worst thing are the lines and how just brutally slow they move. Back in episode 125, I described the security crawl when trying to connect to our Pisa flight mid-morning on a Friday. I was just stunned at how slow the security staff was moving. No sense of urgency as a dozen lines tailed back through the terminal. Honestly, I thought a union had called some kind of a job action. And then this month on the way back, it was a huge tailback off of passport control. Now, I'm used to Frankfurt when you walk up, you answer a question, boom, boom, they stamp your passport and through you go. Not in Munich. It was that same sort of meandering pace that I experienced in November. Like, the place was in slow, it was just like the place was in slow motion. I mean, and it was then the same thing at the one restaurant we found in the satellite portion of Terminal 2 that our Lufthansa flight was going out of. Four people were behind the counter. The line of customers trying to order tailed back, but there was only one of the four people behind the counter who were actually helping customers. The other three were having some, I don't know, some conversation that looked to be about some paperwork. So why did Skytrax rate Munich number four? Apparently because it has its own brewery, a mini golf course, and in the winter, a Christmas market and an ice skating rink, none of which I experienced while struggling through lines trying to make a connection. And maybe that's a problem. I mean, Munich, you know, maybe it's focused on being a shopping mall or entertainment center rather than being an airport that passengers use to get from point A to point B. Planning a flight to Budapest in May, I was offered two connection choices, Munich or Vienna. I got to tell you, I didn't even pause to think about it, choosing Vienna, even though it's nowhere on this Skytrax list. I'm hoping the folks in Vienna work harder on getting me through the airport than grooming a mini golf course. And finally, congrats to Frank Mohaupt, M-O-H-N-H-A-U-P-T. Good German name, lousy German pronunciation on my part, for winning a year's subscription to NordVPN. Frank's entry in the raffle copter drawing entered. I don't know quite how to say that, but the one that I ended up pulling, he got that draw from subscribing to the Travel Commons SoundCloud feed. And thanks again to NordVPN for providing the giveaway prize. Now, if you have any thoughts, questions, a comment, a story, a travel tip, the voice of the traveler, send them along the email address. It hasn't changed since 2005. Comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com. You could use your smartphone to record, then send in an audio comment. You can send a Twitter message to M. Peacock. You can post your thoughts on the Travel Commons Facebook page. Or, as I say, you can always go old school and post your thoughts on the website at travelcommons.com. Topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is the hunt for experiences. In Paris, that first weekend when it was just my wife and I, the kids were hunting haggis in Edinburgh, we spent a good chunk of the time on what I'll call hunts. We got up and out early on Saturday, always a good way to fight jet lag, hunting for a pastry. And it wasn't just any pastry, because in Paris, that would in no way qualify as a hunt. No, it was a specific kind of pastry, a Kugelhopf, a kind of sort of hat-shaped pastry. And not just, of course, not just any Kugelhopf, because you could find those pretty easily. We were tracking down Vandermeersch, which, according to an article my wife had read, I think in Saveur magazine, makes the best Kugelhopf in Paris. And it usually sells out shortly after opening, hence the early morning alarm. So off we go, using Google Maps to tell us the right combination of metros to get us to the correct outer bit of Paris. We get there shortly after opening and had the full selection of Kugelhopfs in front of us, small, medium, and large. A couple of nice middle-aged women running what was really a small shop helped us to buy two smalls, one to eat right away and the second for Sunday morning, and then a medium for Monday morning for breakfast with the kids. We ate that small one fresh on the street. I don't know if it was the best Kugelhopf, because my sample size was and kind of still is one, but it was a pretty damn good pastry, and I thought it was worth foregoing the snooze button on the with an early alarm. Now, Saturday afternoon was my hunt for a microbrewery in an even further out bit of Paris that's only open, this microbrewery is only open on Saturday afternoons. And, you know, where our morning visit to Vandermeersch landed us in a kind of a, seemed like sort of an upscale neighborhood where people were out early for morning runs along the grass sort of boulevard dividers. That afternoon, when we walked up the metro steps to the up to street level, we were kind of put out on the main street of what appeared to be a very heavily North African neighborhood, definitely outside the tourist bubble. Walking across the park here, there wasn't any, you know, grass with people out for their morning or afternoon jogs. It was just dirt. But walking into the microbrewery, and it was kind of off sort of a dodgy street, put us in the midst of what seemed to be kind of the standard afternoon outing for Parisian hipster families. You know, most of the families were with little kids, lots of bikes and beards and plaid and beers, everybody eating sandwiches sold by an artisanal baker who looked to be friends with the brewers. His t-shirt read in English, "More bakers, less bankers." Nice people, great beer, but a very interesting contrast with the surrounding neighborhood. I mean, inside the brewery, I could have been in Portland or Brooklyn. Outside on the street, maybe Tangiers. Good pastry, good beer, but the hunt, searching out these experiences, is as much its own reward. It gave us a reason, a goal, to get out of the travel bubble, off that well-trod sort of Notre Dame to Eiffel Tower to Louvre tourist triangle. Not that we didn't do that too, because we did, but if that's all we had done, it would have been a bit disappointing. And that we did it on our own, rather than as a part of some hipster Paris tour, I don't know, gives us just a little added touch of accomplishment. So the second topic on today's Travel Commons podcast is pop-up entertainment. So toward the end of our week in Paris, heading out again from outside of the normal tourist zone in search of a brew pub this time with my son, my wife and daughter were hunting Longchamp's bags somewhere in the Latin Quarter or the Champs-Élysées. So Andrew and I get on the metro to find a busker on our subway car, a tuba busker. He was an older guy, kind of wearing, I don't know, a slightly Tyrolean-looking hat with a waist-high battery-powered speaker in front of him, taped to a luggage wheelie type of cart, and then he had an orange donations can taped to the handle of the cart. The speaker played the backing track while he played the main melody on the tuba. After one song, which I can't say that I recognized, he left the backing track playing while walking the car with his hand out for tips. I think he was on the car for, I don't know, maybe three stops. On the way back, during one of the 18 stops that was on the way back, we were definitely outside the tourist zone. Another busker walked onto our car, a younger guy who turned out to be a rapping busker, as opposed to a tuba busker, a rapping busker. He had sort of, though, the same speaker rig, so This seems pretty standard, and he had the same cadence as the tuba player. He was the last guy in. He stood in front of the door after it closed, powered up the backbeat on the speakers. Then he rapped out a song between stops, solicited money between the next stops, and then left the train. It feels like these guys have got, you know, kind of a standard thing going. I wonder kind of how much money they end up making. Now, I also saw what I consider to be more typical subway buskers, you know, guys playing guitar or maybe a double bass or a saxophone in the connecting tunnels, sort of taking advantage of those tile acoustics. A little less typical was a customer acting out an opera scene in a wider area, kind of where two to three tunnels sort of came together. Not only, though, were they singing the opera, again, with tile-driven acoustics, they were acting out a scene, the woman fleeing toward one tunnel only to have the man catch her and pull her back. Honestly, it took me a moment to connect the singing to the action and to realize that this wasn't an actual assault, that this was, you know, that this was play acting. It definitely drew a bit of a crowd. I don't know if this was real busking or just advertising an opera show, but it certainly got my attention. Now, later on, Andrew and I were walking in front of Notre Dame and heard another woman singing opera. Opera thing going on here. It took us a minute to locate her. She had her back to a building on the north side of the plaza. It was another good acoustic location. The echo off the building seemed to amplify and project her voice across the open space in front of the cathedral. The police in this plaza right in front of Notre Dame, where you've got all these tourists, the police definitely, you know, keep a heavy presence here. And we'd seen them earlier descend on a woman who was panhandling the folks standing in line to get into the cathedral. But this time with the opera singer, they let the woman finish up her aria before moving her along, which I thought was a nice touch. Quite a change from Chicago's Bucket Boys on Michigan Avenue. Okay, that's it. That's the end of Travel Commons podcast number 128. I hope you all enjoy the show. I hope you decide to stay subscribed. Check out the show notes for music links. You can always find the Travel Commons podcast on SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes. But of course, if you're listening to this, then you've already found it. So there you go. I don't know why I keep saying this. Hey, but remember, if you have a story, thought, comment, gripe, the voice of the traveler, send them along. Text your audio file, comments, COMMENTS at travelcommons.com, or to M. Peacock on Twitter. Post them on the Travel Commons Facebook page, or post them on the website at travelcommons.com. Thanks always to everyone who takes the time to send in emails, tweets, post comments on the website. So I will work very hard for California Flyer to to come up with the April edition of the Travel Commons podcast. It seems that my cadence actually, as opposed to, even though it looks like it's monthly, it kind of feels like it's been every 5 weeks. So to get one inside of April, given here we are on May 31st, to get one inside of April, I think I'm going to have to short cycle it and maybe get it in the third week of April. I give myself a little space. But anyhow, I seem to be back on the road traveling, so I should have some good content. But you guys can always contribute content too. Again, email me or send stuff along. I always, it's always helpful. I always enjoy getting the feedback. So anyhow, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. Safe travels, and until we talk again, thanks for stopping by the Travel Commons. Bye now.